Welcome back to Word on the Hills, with me, Felicity Sidnell-Reed, my co-host, Gwyn Sheltimer, and our guest this week, naturalist and writer, Drew Monkman. So, Drew, that's a very big book you've got there. Tell us a bit more about it and some of its features.
Yes, well, the book is very big, that's correct. I think it has an apt title. So we begin with a fairly extensive introduction where we talk about the idea of disconnection from nature, something that Richard Louv has coined as nature deficit disorder. Okay. Not a recognized medical disorder, but the problems that arise from a childhood spent outside of nature, in other words, indoors. We talk about how to raise a naturalist. We talk about key species to learn, hints on getting kids outside. We explain that the book covers essentially all of North America, where there are four somewhat distinct seasons. So most of the United States and, of course, essentially all of Canada. We then have a basic skill section where we talk about everything from how to pay attention, how to engage the five senses, introduction to birding, an introduction to botanizing, identifying butterflies. We talk about how to lead a hike, how to connect with nature in a digital age, photography, basic nature photography, journaling, and also the area of citizen science, which is a very popular phenomenon these days where everyday people, generalists, become the eyes and ears of scientists and submit their observations online.
Yes, about the weather and going over, that sort of thing, isn't it?
And monarch butterflies and bumblebees and all. We have a section on key concepts explaining why it is we have seasons. We talk about climate change. We go into quite a bit of detail about evolution, the wonder that resides in all species. We have a Darwin character in the book who tells stories about just how amazing everyday creatures are and how this is revealed through evolution. But the heart of the book are the four seasons. In each of the four seasons, we start by giving a summary of key events that are happening that month in all areas of nature. We have a poem. We suggest things to collect, what to write about in your nature journal, what you can photograph. We have ongoing stories about a chickadee called Black Cap. We talk about what you can do in your magic spot, which is just a nature-rich area, possibly in your own backyard that we want the kids to return to time after time. And then we have several dozen activities for each of the months. How do you engage the senses, how to explore evolution, and then activities and games and crafts based on birds, on mammals, on plants, on the weather, the sky, and even cultural celebrations like Halloween. So these include things like a frog song orchestra, how to build forts, how to do a bee dance, how to do a pond study, adopting a tree, taking a night hike, how to celebrate the equinox and the solstice. A few years' worth of activities.
Yes. You've said that it's important for kids to have some understanding of evolution and big history. So by big history, you mean what?
So the term big history is essentially the story of everything. It's the story of from the Big Bang, the creation of the universe, through the creation of stars, elements, planets, life itself, although we don't understand exactly the mechanism by which life began, evolution to us. So what knowing big history does is it allows people to connect with everything around them. I think we all need to feel immersed in something larger, have a sense of belonging. You know, without it, we feel dislocated. And I think there's a lot of dislocation happening now. So it's in some ways, it's a creation story, but a creation story grounded in science. Mm-hmm. And gives a great deal of encouragement or inspiration. And maybe will inspire people to act to sort of shape where the story goes from here. It's a far more inspiring vision than just talking about sustainability or something.
Yes,
you know, we have to have a sustainable society, but who would want to just have a sustainable marriage? You know, you want to have something a little more inspiring. So, so just realizing, as Carl Sagan said, that we are humans are made of stardust, and we are the universe reflecting back upon itself. You know, I think that idea is extremely powerful, and it's not something that science and philosophy and educators have really talked about.
No, I can see that, you know, that also is something that maybe have you got practical things that you can do with kids about, or is it, I mean, it is an abstract kind of thing to a child.
That's right.
And goodness, I taught history, so I know it's how hard it is to get them to even recognize 100 years, what 100 years
certainly
means. So how do you approach that?
Yes, well, there are all kinds of resources available online. In the book, we tell the story of big history. Mm. We have an imaginary walk exercise where, through a story, we guide the child backwards from himself all the way to his or her 185th million great-grandfather, which was a fish, by the way.
Oh, and I was just going to say, I thought we were all descended from seven women.
So, and we have numerous activities on evolution, timelines, you know, fossil-based activities, seeing the beast in oneself, you know, the fact that some people can wiggle their ears. Well, that relates back to our great-grandfathers, for whom being able to move your ears like deer was a very important adaptation. Yeah. So there's all kinds of reminders of our ancient selves.
There's so much to talk about it. This is going to be difficult. But briefly, tell us a little bit about your website. You maintain a website where you post the columns that you've published in the Peterborough Examiner, and you've written over 450 of them. So that's a long time you've been writing those. How do you choose your topics for those?
Well, when it comes to nature, it's nature essentially means the entire universe outside of your office. So there's no lack of topics. But essentially, I write about what's happening each month in nature. Mm-hmm. I provide seasonal overviews. For example, at the beginning of each season, I do a copy on what to be looking for. I do talk about the wonder of evolution. I do touch on climate change, which unfortunately is something we cannot ignore, despite the fact that some people do. I do a number of species profiles, how to connect kids with nature, of course. Local conservation groups in the Peterborough area, like the Kawartha Land Trust, the Ontario Turtle Conservation Centre, really any number of activities. Mm-hmm. And then on my website, I also post nature sightings of my own, plus sightings that people report to me. So it might be you know, what the loons are up to on Stony Lake, or maybe someone's seen a family of sandhill cranes in the Warsaw area, or, you know, a rare bird that's turned up at the Cobourg Harbour, mm-hmm. which is a wonderful place for birding. So almost every day I include sightings on the webpage.
Mm. How about reading us a little bit more from your book?
Certainly.
What's this passage about?
So I'm going to read a passage called How to Raise a Naturalist.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like chickens.
Erich Fromm, a German psychologist, coined the term biophilic to describe the innate need all children have to connect with other species. In other words, children are born loving nature. It is a need that is deeply rooted in all our genes. Educational thinker Edith Cobb argued that there is a window of time lasting from early childhood until about 14 years of age when, if children are provided with rich and repeated experiences in nature, they are more likely to develop a lifelong love for the natural world. If we keep our children indoors, however, We run the risk that nature may simply become the backdrop for their daily lives, as inconsequential as the billboards, neon lights, and telephone poles that decorate our cityscapes. Children are active, curious, energetic, and enthusiastic. They love to play, imagine, discover, and explore. No wonder that a conventional hike through a park or the woods can at times be boring for a child. But take a few steps off the trail, roll over a log, dip a net in a pond, or romp along the edges of a rushing stream, and the experience suddenly becomes an adventure. So, how can adults be effective mentors to children? Open doors, but don't push them through. Ultimately, loving nature should never be forced. Children will pick up and emulate your enthusiasm. Take time out of your personal life to get outdoors yourself. If children see you making an effort to be out in nature, they'll want to do the same. Go forth with explorer's eyes. Be amazed at what you see, but also allow your children the gift of discovery. For example, you might know where to find salamanders along a certain trail. You could simply say to your children, "Hey, do you want to find a salamander?" Or you might say, "I wonder what we'll find under those logs." In the first instance, you have owned the discovery. In the second, the excitement and joy belongs to the child. There is nothing quite so thrilling as a child bellowing out, "Dad, look what I found!" Give children the time and space for discovery. Remember that play can be a powerful teacher. The natural landscape lends itself to creative play. A stick can become a magic wand, a copse of trees, a castle. It is through unstructured play that children cultivate and enhance their imaginations. Being creative means creating, letting the children make forts, mud pies, and flower crowns. Never doubt the value of exploring and playing in the natural environment. These experiences are at the very heart of developing young naturalists.
Many thanks, Drew. That was really fascinating. So where can listeners buy your books?
Well, the book is available through Chapters. It can certainly be ordered by any independent bookstore. It is available online as well through the usual culprits, Amazon, of course, and Chapters Indigo.
Can you give us the website address?
Yeah, the website is drewmunkman.com.
Okay. To connect with us, please send comments, queries, or suggestions for whom we might interview in future programs to our website, www.wordonthehills.com, where all our broadcasts are archived. We love to hear from you and welcome your comments on our programs. Thanks for tuning in to the show. We hope you'll join us for another program next week.